If you're a small business owner like me, and you need to hire quickly, I'd recommend you try Indeed. Indeed is a matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. And according to Indeed's data, 93% of employers say Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Right now, our listeners can get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/Hertz. That's Indeed.com/HERTZ. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Thanks to ZocDoc for sponsoring this episode. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated doctors near you. Once you've found one you like, you can instantly book an appointment. With ZocDoc, you can even filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. Go to ZocDoc.com/20K and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then, find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/20K. ZocDoc.com/20K. You're listening to 20,000 Hertz. I just so happen to be a huge science fiction fan. I love sci-fi books, sci-fi movies, sci-fi TV shows. I love it all. And the reason I love it so much is because it lets you experience a reality that's so different from our own. These writers and filmmakers create entire universes from scratch. And something that I've always found really fascinating is how they deal with language. When you're writing about characters in another galaxy, or in the distant future, it doesn't make sense for everyone to speak an existing human language, especially if they're not even human. Think about all the alien sounds you hear in Star Wars.
Yeah, I speak a little now, just listen to me, you.
Now, the alien vocalizations in Star Wars aren't fully developed languages. Still, they do an amazing job of conveying emotion. But sometimes, creators take things a step further and build an actual, fully constructed language, complete with grammatical rules, sentence structure, and carefully considered translations for every sound the characters make. This story comes from Imaginary Worlds. Here's host Eric Malinsky.
Jen Ucelis is a singer in Chicago. And about 8 years ago, a friend of hers told her about a show that was looking for performers. The show was a Klingon Christmas Carol. Now, Jen had not watched a lot of Star Trek before.
But I have this, like, hardcore love of really goofy, niche theater. And I was like, really? What do I have to do to get cast in that? And he goes, well, are you allergic to latex? And I was like, no. And so he goes, well, come out and audition.
And then she learned something else about the show. All of her lines would be in the Klingon language. And yes, Klingon is a fully functioning language that actors who play Klingons in Star Trek usually have to learn. In this case, in the Klingon Christmas Carol, there would be super titles above the stage in English, so the audience would know what's going on. Now, that might be intimidating for some performers, but Jen has an opera background, so singing in a foreign language is not unusual for her.
I picked up on the language very quickly and the pronunciation, and my fight choreography skills weren't so great, but...
Wait, did you say that there's fighting involved in the show?
Oh, absolutely. The Fezziwig party, it turns into a giant bar brawl. And, you know, Klingons aren't having a good time if there's not a little blood involved.
She did the show for 2 years, and then she found out that a podcast called Improvised Star Trek was looking for someone to sing Kiss Me by Sixpence Down the Richer in Klingon, and they were wondering if she was interested.
And I was like, oh, heck yes. Within 24 hours, we were picked up by TeamCoco.com and the Mary Sue and just a whole bunch of other big blogs and websites. And we were like, oh my gosh, what just happened? It was the response to it was overwhelmingly positive. it's kind of crazy because, like, the internet, I always say, like, the internet hates everything. But for some reason, the internet really liked this.
And then Jen had an idea. What if she put out an album of pop songs in Klingon? She worked with translators on songs that she thought a Klingon would sing, like Love is a Battlefield. And that album did so well. Started doing concerts in full costume and makeup. In fact, she created a whole new persona for herself, the Klingon pop warrior.
Is it hard to sing in Klingon?
Yes.
Simple answer.
Yes, it's not easy. There are some really awkward sounds. It's pretty grating on the vocal cords. There's very harsh guttural sounds in the language. You get a lot of that kind of stuff. And then trying to make it melodic and pretty. I usually don't do more than a 60-minute performance just because more than that, and it just starts to feel really wrong.
To this day, she cannot believe there was an audience out there waiting for a Klingon rock star. But if you look at the history of constructed languages, or conlangs for short, this was a long time coming. I mean, people have been inventing languages on their own for centuries. You know, just as a hobby. But those languages all die off because they're usually just spoken among friends. The difference now is because with sci-fi fantasy, we can see a whole imaginary culture attached to these constructed languages. Now, the granddaddy of all constructed languages and fantasy worlds, at least in the modern era, is J.R.R. Tolkien. And I've talked before how Tolkien was really groundbreaking in a lot of ways, like having maps of Middle-earth. And the same thing is true with the languages that Tolkien developed for the elves in his stories. Michael Drought is a Tolkien expert, and he says that Tolkien was one of the first modern fantasy writers to appreciate how much we can learn about a fictional culture by studying their language.
And I think that interaction between culture and language in history is just much easier to see in something like a constructed language.
And he thinks that studying the language of a fantasy culture can give us a new perspective on our own language and how it reflects our culture in ways that we often take for granted.
And to be able to see it all right there in, like, you know, a manageable amount in Middle Earth, I think gives us great insight into how this is happening in the sort of distributed intelligence of the millions of people who are making the culture we live in full Big Earth.
But Tolkien didn't think that people in full Big Earth would try to actually speak Elvish. And we know that because he barely created any verbs for the Elvish languages.
So when they came time, they wanted to write dialogue in Elvish for the Peter Jackson films, they just had no verbs. And finally, David Salo is a linguist at the University of Wisconsin, who was their consultant. They said, you've got to just make some up. You know, use the same sound system, use the same rules that Tolkien had, but we don't have enough verbs to have a conversation.
What did they say?
But really, the films gave it such an impetus, and you had people wanting to expand the language and people wanting to write poetry in Elvish and write stories and dialogue, doing what had happened in Klingon.
But when the Klingon language was created, nobody thought that would take off either. Least of all the guy that actually invented the language, Mark Okrand. Mark was hired by Paramount in the mid-1980s to invent the Klingon language for the movie Star Trek III. But he did not invent the language completely from scratch. We did hear Klingons speaking their own language in the first Star Trek movie in 1979, but turns out they were speaking gibberish.
So I listened to that and wrote down, you know, phonetically what I was hearing, wrote down what the subtitles meant, and imposed a structure on it.
Now, even though the audience wouldn't really know this, just by reading the subtitles or hearing the sounds of Klingon, Mark wanted the Klingon language to feel alien in its syntax. So we decided to apply the least common rules for languages on Earth. For instance,
in any language, there's sort of three basic parts of speech in a sentence, which is the subject, the verb, and the object. You have to put them in some order or other. English, it happens to be that order, the subject and then the verb and then the object. But the least common by far are the ones where the object comes first. So that's what I chose for Klingon. For Klingon, I chose object and then verb and then subject.
Mark says the actors playing Klingons were great students because this was a creative challenge that a lot of them didn't expect to get. But then Mark himself actually faced a creative challenge when he was brought back to work on Star Trek VI. In one scene, the Klingons reveal that they can quote Shakespeare in English. But the director had a last-minute addition. He wanted Christopher Plummer's Klingon character to quote Shakespeare in Klingon. In fact, he wanted him to say, to be or not to be.
And I thought, oh no. And the reason I thought, oh no, is because one of the decisions I made when I was making up the grammar of Klingon was that there's no verb to be.
So Mark decided that the closest translation to that would be to live or not to live, which feels kind of Klingon-ish.
So I go over to Christopher Plummer and he says, I understand you have a new phrase to teach me. I said, yes. He says, what is it? Well, to say to live or not to live, there's a number of different ways I could have done that, but I kind of did it a very, very simple way. So it means live or live not, which is yin par yin be. So he says, yin, yin? And I said, yeah. He says, that's too wimpy. That's too wimpy. He didn't say that. He said something else, but that's what he meant. He said, think of something else that's more Klingon-like. I said, oh, now what am I going to do? So I said, what if we say tach pach tach be? He goes, tach. Tach is good. Let's do that. Well, up until that moment, tach was a suffix that meant to continue doing whatever the verb is. So if you say eat plus tach means to keep on eating, to continue eating, something like that. So I kind of promoted tach to be a verb in its own right that means to continue, to go on, to endure.
Tach, pa, tach, be.
So Christopher Plummer changed the Klingon dictionary. And yes, Mark had written a Klingon dictionary, which was published in the mid-1980s.
But what I thought, honestly and truly thought would happen is people would buy it, thumb through it, say, oh, look, there's the Klingon word for shoe, ha, 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 you know, and put it on their coffee table. But that's not what happened. What happened is people bought it and read it very thoroughly and studied it, and a language-speaking community started to get going.
In the decades since Mark developed Klingon, we've seen an explosion of other constructed languages, aka conlangs. There's Valyrian and Dothraki in Game of Thrones, there's Na'vi in Avatar, and there's Trigitta slang in The 100. Some of these languages now have a whole community built around them, just like Klingon. But other constructed languages just haven't gotten the same kind of traction. That's coming up after the break.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Congrats to Riley Lucas for getting last episode's mystery sound right. Believe it or not, that's the sound of a snail chowing down on a piece of lettuce. To get that recording, the team at the BBC Earth Lab recorded a snail in an anechoic chamber with an ultra-sensitive microphone. Here's this week's mystery sound. And again. If you know that sound, go to the web address mystery.20k.org and let us know. If you guess it right, you'll be entered to win one of our super soft 20,000 Hertz t-shirts. Thanks to Shopify for sponsoring 20,000 Hertz. But that's not the only thing I have to thank them for, because I built the first ever web store for 20,000 Hertz using Shopify. Without Shopify, I probably would have never gotten those legendary super soft t-shirts into production, and the whole process was super easy. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, whether you're selling handmade dog costumes, customized wedding supplies, or super soft t-shirts from a brand new podcast, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. When we started out, our Shopify-powered store was one of the reasons I could afford to keep going. And according to their data, Shopify-powered websites have an almost 40% higher conversion rate compared to other platforms. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/20k, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/20k to start growing your business, no matter what business you're in. Shopify.com/20k. NetSuite has simple solutions for complicated business problems. For example, let's say you open a bakery. Before long, your hotcakes are selling like, well, hotcakes. But you keep running out of ingredients. No problem, because not only can NetSuite automate your purchasing so you're never out of stock, but it can also check that your staff have the right training to make those hotcakes to perfection. NetSuite can even handle online orders so your hotcakes can really take off. Having one system handling all of this saves both time and money. And if there's two things we all want more of, it's time and money. Okay, so three things if you include hotcakes. That's probably why more than 37,000 businesses have already signed up for NetSuite by Oracle. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/20k now to take advantage of this offer. That's netsuite.com/20k. netsuite.com/20k. When Mark Okrand published the Klingon Dictionary in 1985, he thought people would treat it like a novelty gift. But Mark completely underestimated how devoted Trekkies are. Today, the number of people who speak at least some Klingon is estimated to be in the thousands. Even the language learning app Duolingo offers a Klingon course.
Now, Mark had no idea that Klingon had taken off like this until he was invited to a conference of Klingon speakers.
That was odd, and I wasn't prepared for it, frankly, because I'll admit I'm not a very good speaker of Klingon, because when I was doing all this, there was no particular reason to be one. So when it started happening, I was kind of taken aback that people were doing it. But it was also fascinating to read what people were saying about the language, and I realized it was more complicated and interesting than I thought it was when I was going along making it up.
I like to describe every Klingon sentence as a murder mystery. The first thing you find out is, who's lying dead on the floor? Then you find out how they died. You know, were they shot? Were they stabbed? Were they poisoned? And lastly, you find out who did it to them. Object, verb, subject.
That is Lawrence Schoen, one of the founders of the Klingon Language Institute, or the KLI for short. And the KLI has a rule that only Mark can add new words to the dictionary. But every year, they can petition him to invent new words. Meanwhile, the KLI has been using that limited vocabulary to translate all sorts of stuff, including Shakespeare. But I asked Lawrence, why did the Klingon language catch on in the early 1990s? I mean, was it just because of Star Trek VI and the character of Worf on The Next Generation? He said, yeah, but there's one other really important factor.
We came about as the internet exploded, and suddenly you could do real-time conversations in this made-up language with people all over the world. So in the very early days of the KLI, I would get these letters, and they all invariably began with the same with some variation on, I thought I was the only one. And maybe they were in their town, in their city, but suddenly that didn't matter.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, constructed languages are nothing new. People have been making them up for years. In fact, David Peterson is a member of the Language Creation Society, which creates conlangs for their own sake.
there's also an element of writing to it. Because when you're creating a lexicon, you're essentially creating the entire history of a people through their words. And you don't have to learn a language or use it to appreciate it. It's just the type of thing that you should be able to, you know, look at a description or look at a grammar or even just look at a lexicon and see the treasures that language creators have buried therein, you know.
Now, David has been hired to create languages for sci-fi fantasy worlds. In fact, he actually won a competition to create Dothraki, the language of the warrior clans in Game of Thrones.
It was incredibly grueling because I just spent every hour working on my proposal. I made it through the first round, which was judged by other language creators. Then I beefed up my proposal again. I had over 300 pages of material by this point in time. We sent the final four proposals off to the producers, and they chose mine.
Talan ragat evethemal. Yeto finni yete yom.
Kisha vastoki vosarek sazivi doma dore chekate.
And David thought he had created the next big conlang that would take on a life of its own. You know, essentially the next Klingon.
We were super excited about the Dothraki job. 2 months later, Avatar comes out. So if you're looking at something that, you know, took off, the Na'vi language, it did take off. It's still very successful. So then it's by the time, you know, Game of Thrones comes along, it's like, well, it's another created language. It never had a chance.
He has a few theories why Dothraki did not take off the same way that Na'vi did. But his main theory is that Avatar appealed to a younger audience that has the time and energy to learn a constructed language from a fantasy world. After that, he was hired to create a few more conlangs, but they didn't take off either. And then he got a job inventing a language for the CW show The 100, which is about the young descendants of people who survived a nuclear war. And this language, which he created called Trigidislang, is supposed to be an evolution of English in the far future.
Now get it down, Gustus. Feel like you don't tell Iopote. I gotta hook up, stay if he.
Now, this show, The 100, does not have a big audience, but the audience is young, very loyal, and they love these characters called the Grounders, speak Trigidislang. So the fans really took to the language. In fact, they asked David questions about it all the time.
It's really wonderful. It kind of took me by surprise. This is the reaction I thought I was going to be getting to Dothraki, and that just never happened at all.
David has now become an advocate for constructed languages being part of any fantasy culture because he's seen how a conlang can really help bond a community of fans together, and it can be really effective in world building.
And I think that especially if you're talking about worlds that aren't our own, language is a detail that matters. It's not expensive to get somebody. Like, there are people that already are just spending almost every single free hour of their day working on a created language that would be over the moon to have created, for example, a language for the Martians in Supergirl. And so since it's not going to be super expensive, why not? I mean, God, it just kills me to hear when, you know, shows and movies are skating by on gibberish. It's just, there's no point to it right now.
But David does think that there is a correlation between how often characters are featured on a show and how popular the language is. I mean, he thinks that one reason why Dothraki didn't catch on is that the Dothrakis weren't in the show very much after season one. And even though Klingon may be the envy of the conlang world, even Klingon's popularity started to wane when Star Trek didn't feature the Klingons for many, many years. That's why a lot of Klingonists have been very excited about the new show, Star Trek Discovery. The first season featured the Klingons very heavily. And in the conlang community, there's a lot of buzz around the language consultant on that show, Robin Stewart, who in many ways represents the next generation, no pun intended, of Klingon speakers. In fact, beyond being a Klingon expert, Robin is also a pilot. And if you hear the wind whipping through her cell phone, it's because she was calling me from an undisclosed location near a military base in Canada.
You know, I have the army life, I have the flying life and the Klingon life, and probably more lives than that.
Oh, by the way, your Klingon name is, it's spelled Q-O-V. How do you pronounce that?
It's going to sound like a wind noise again. Cove. I say it rhymes with stove, except the first sound is like you're choking on spinach.
Cove?
Yeah, I need some more in there. Imagine, have you ever choked on spinach? Like you're eating it and then you realize some of it's gone down your throat and it's too much and you have to go to get it back out again?
Probably. I mean, I don't know if it's spinach, but certainly I've had that experience. So like, yeah.
I actually think that speaking Klingon, you know, and having the ability to say that at will may have saved my life. I was actually choking once and did that and food came right out.
You know, I said to Robin, the one thing that's always baffled me about the success of Klingon is that it's such a harsh language to speak and to listen to. I mean, it makes sense for the Klingons, or this fierce alien warrior culture. They're often the antagonists in the story, or maybe anti-heroes. But she says that's the point. The Klingons are rowdy and boisterous and very blunt, which she finds freeing.
It's actually easier to discuss really hot-button topics because the same conversation hasn't been said over and over again. The same trite words aren't coming out. I have a good friend whose father was murdered, and he, you know, told his Klingon friends, you know, that, you know, in Klingon, there's no euphemisms in Klingon. You just say the things. Another Klingonist came out to me as trans. I haven't had that conversation very often in English, but for her, it was kind of freeing to have it in Klingon. Because the trite words aren't there. It's so strange to have like learned these new words and have them go like, you know, right to your soul.
In fact, she says that Klingon has really become part of who she is in the real world.
And we were talking once about body modification. There was somebody that came to one of the Kapame, the Klingon conferences, and they had not just tattoos, but had done some, you know, actual interesting body modifications. You know, there's kind of a whoa, like you made this huge step thing. And I said, you know, in Klingon, I said, well, you know, by speaking Klingon, we're remapping the insides of our heads in, you know, in ways, you know, far more altering than this surgery.
That's funny because it totally ties into Arrival. You know, the short story it was based on in the movie, the idea that the way you speak a language begins to change the way you think.
Yeah, that concept that the way someone speaks entirely is, it, you know, changes the way that they can look at the world. You know, sadly, they have found very little evidence for it. It's so appealing.
Jenu Selis, the Klingon pop warrior, agrees with Robin. Taking on the attitude of a Klingon can be really liberating.
Because everything about Klingons is hard. They work hard and they fight hard, but they also love really hard and everything is very immediate for them. It's very much about living in the present because, you know, today is a good day to die.
Okay, if I could start every day by saying today is a good day to die instead of, oh my God, first I need coffee and then oh, I have so much work to do, I might have a better attitude as well. But to keep evolving, Klingon does need to keep branching out, so it's not so dependent on Star Trek. And that's why I think that Jen's music also represents a next phase of Klingon culture evolving in the real world. And as I mentioned before, she tries to pick songs that feel Klingon-like. But she's also pushing the boundaries of what a Klingon would say or sing.
Even when I'm doing silly love ballads, like My Heart Will Go On, like there's something really powerful about a Klingon singing that song.
Is there, when you sing that, is there a more literal translation to My Heart Will Go On? Is like My Heart Will Not Explode or something
it
like that?
Actually, you hear Tach a lot in that song, and Tach means to continue.
And we know that Tach means to continue because of a change that Christopher Plummer added to the Klingon language. Although, there is another reason why My Heart Will Go On takes on a different meaning in Klingon.
Klingons actually have like fully redundant organ systems, so it kind of makes sense on a literal level that if something happened, the heart would go on.
Thank you.
This story was from Imaginary Worlds, a sci-fi and fantasy podcast hosted by Eric Malinsky. Subscribe to Imaginary Worlds right here in your podcast player. 20,000 Hertz is produced out of the sound design studios of DeFacto Sound. For a little sonic inspiration, follow DeFacto Sound on Instagram. And for really silly sound design videos, subscribe to the DeFacto Sound YouTube page. There are so many ways to get more 20,000 Hertz in your life. To get a behind-the-scenes look and help us name episodes, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. To join the discussion after every episode, check out our subreddit, which is at reddit.com/r/20k. And of course, you can always write us directly at hi.20k.org. Thanks for listening.